You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 22nd of April 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, it's Easter Monday. It's a bank holiday Monday, because the banks define our holidays nowadays. The church no longer defines what a holy day is. The banks do that for us, which I think is a real shame. And people don't very often question that, and they should. Why is it that our holidays are decided by the banks now? I think in America they just call them public holidays. But over here in Britain they are bank holidays. So there really isn't that much news to be getting into. We have got a couple of news stories that I think are worth drawing attention to. And the first one is about Carl Benjamin and UKIP. And you will remember Max and I have been discussing over the last couple of weeks the improvements that UKIP have made and how Nigel Farage is splitting the vote with his Brexit party. And obviously it's good that people are going to make their, they're going to make their annoyance felt by voting for the Brexit party. And the Brexit party are leading in the polls for the EU elections. But it's a great shame that Nigel steamed in there and stole the thunder from UKIP, because it would be so much better if everybody just had UKIP as the protest vote, because UKIP's policies are so much better than Nigel Farage's policies. UKIP have a whole portfolio of ideas of what they want to do once Britain leaves the EU. And they also have councillors. They have people on the local councils, and they're a proper political party. They weren't just formed to get us out of the EU. They were formed as an alternative. And Nigel's Brexit party is really just an escape valve for Tories who are disgusted at what the Tory party are doing. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But one good thing about UKIP, which I think is going to save them, I think even though UKIP aren't doing so well in the polls, they're doing about 7% in the polls, and Nigel Farage's Brexit party is at about 30%. So they are fairly low. They are lower than Labour and the Conservative Party, but I think they are still going to win in some areas. I think they are going to win in the southwest with Carl Benjamin, Sargon of Akkad, and I think they're going to win in the region of Scotland that Mark Meacham is standing for, Count Dankula. I think they're going to win just by their status alone. I mean, they have hundreds of thousands of subscribers to their YouTube channels, hundreds of thousands of people that support them. So I think that was a really good move of Gerard Batten to put them forward. An even better move would be if he was to allow Tommy Robinson to join UKIP and put Tommy Robinson forward as a candidate. If he was to do that, then maybe UKIP would go up in the polls and they would be almost as popular as the Brexit Party. Because you've got to remember that there are 30% of the country that just don't vote. And a large portion of that 30% of the country that don't vote are probably very sympathetic to Tommy Robinson. And if Gerard Batten was to put Tommy forward as a Euro MP, then they would be likely, I think, to get out and vote. Plus, it would be so much fun to see Tommy Robinson in the EU Parliament, also going up against Nigel Farage, of course, who has really slandered and smeared him. So that would be great to see. It would also solve Tommy's security problems, because if he was a European Union Member of Parliament, then the police would have to protect him. They wouldn't be able to take away his panic button that he used to have for if communists tried to attack his family. They would have to protect him. So that would be great to see. I really would like to see that. But what we have got so far with UKIP is Carl Benjamin and Mark Meacham. And they did a press conference the other day that I do recommend people watch because it is hilarious to see. And I really couldn't have wanted them to handle it any better than they actually did. I mean, Sargon of Akkad, Carl Benjamin, he's really gone up quite high in my estimation since he became this European Union MP. And you do have to, or candidate for European Union MP. And with these things, you do have to weigh up just how popular they are, just how much support they are getting. And you have to weigh that up against just how pure the quality of their ideals are. And obviously, Carl Benjamin is not a white nationalist. He's not a nationalist. He's not a racial nationalist. He's not an ethno-nationalist. But he is against political correctness. He is against feminism. He is against Islamization. And he's a big promoter of free speech. And because of that, he is seen as if he's on the alt-right. I mean, the guy is not part of the alt-right. He's centre-right. He is alternative centre-right, I would say. I would say he's part of the alt-light. He's a civic nationalist. He's certainly no extremist. He just believes that everybody should have a voice and that there should be a free marketplace of ideas where people can debate to get as close as they can to the truth. And that's what he believes in. And I believe in that as well. I believe there should be free debate. And if you have free debate, then you can ascertain where the truth lies or where the truth is most likely to lie and who has the most truthful ideas that are the most likely to come to fruition that are going to bring benefits for us. So this is what Carl Benjamin promotes. And they did a press conference the other day and the mainstream media were all there. And none of them asked him about his ideas. None of them asked him about the platform that he was running on in the EU, which I think is a good platform. He's going to try and repeal the internet censorship laws. That's the most important thing to him, is to repeal, I believe it's called Article 13, which is going to really hit internet content creators hard, and it's going to mean that only the mainstream media are able to operate, basically. It's a big scam to censor the alternative media. And only if you've got lots of money will you be able to operate. So he's trying to repeal that. That's the main thing he's interested in. And Mark Meacham, he's interested in promoting free speech and preventing censorship and preventing the sort of thing that gets YouTube comedians locked up in prison for tasteless jokes, because of course he was locked up for teaching his pub dog to wave its arm when he said things like gas the Jews, which obviously a joke, a bit of a tasteless joke, but a joke all the it can only be seen as a joke. And he's not a neo-Nazi, he's not even a nationalist, and yet they still sent him to jail. So he's got a personal issue in this, that he wants to promote free speech. And they didn't ask them about any of that. Gerard Batten was there. He gave a very good speech, talked about the EU, talked about the traitors that are in power, and Theresa May, and how she's deliberately messed up Brexit, and how if you want a genuine Brexit, you've got to vote UKIP. If you want to vote for a party that knows what they are going to do, they know how they are going to leave the European Union, you need to vote for UKIP. And again, they didn't ask him any questions about that. All they were interested in is a tweet that Carl Benjamin sent 3 years ago to a Labour MP. And the tweet itself just said, "I wouldn't even rape you." A tweet saying that he would not rape that MP. Not under any circumstances. And this is being portrayed as if he had said that he was going to rape her. I mean, they quote this tweet And then they make it, and then they act and behave as if he had said he was going to rape her, when quite clearly that is not what he was saying. Now, I've got an article here from, it's partially from Indy 100 and partially from the BBC, and this describes what went on at this press conference. As I say, I do recommend listeners actually watch the press conference because it is very funny. They say, a YouTuber turned UKIP candidate who said he wouldn't even rape a female Labour MP has refused to apologise. Now, this is great because this is what he's doing. He's refusing to apologise. I saw him being, this is Carl Benjamin, that is, and I saw him being interviewed by Lucy Brown. And he was saying, one thing that I've learned over the last few years is never to apologise. And I hate seeing these MPs crawling and backtracking and desperately apologising, trying to appease the left-wing media, because there is no way that you can actually appease them. And this is how the multitude of people in Britain, and I'm sure everywhere else, most white people, feel like this. We are sick to death of political correctness, and we're sick to death of people who should know better rolling over and apologising and doing what the left tell them to. A recent example of this was Roger Scruton, who was sacked from the Beautifying Architecture Commission simply for speaking his mind on a couple of issues and not being particularly politically correct about it. And the Conservative Party sacked him. And people are sick to death of this. They want people that are going to stand up for what they say and are not going to backtrack because they're not leftist, not left-wing enough. So he was saying that he had noticed this, and this is the way that he is going to be campaigning. He's not going to be apologising for anything, and how it worked very well for Donald Trump. So that's great. And to see that in action is good as well. At the news conference in London, Mr. Benjamin accused media outlets of smearing him, which is exactly what they've done. They've written nothing at all about him apart from this tweet from 3 years ago. When Gerard Batten was being interviewed on the Andrew Marr show a couple of weeks back, it was the same thing. Andrew Marr was asking Gerard Batten about this tweet, as if it was Gerard Batten that had made this tweet, as if because Carl Benjamin had made a tweet 3 years ago, Gerard Batten should be sacking him now. Gerard Batten, I think, did very well in this interview. He said, I believe that Mr. Benjamin was being satirical there. It was satire, which it quite obviously is. And I believe he's also made a whole video explaining this. And it was because this left-wing MP, she had said something which had obviously upset a lot of people. And not everybody is very eloquent. Not everybody can express the emotions that they're feeling in eloquent language. And a lot of people will just let fire with raw emotion. That's just the way that it is. And you will get people that will be saying stupid things like, she deserves to be raped for that. I mean, that is a ridiculous thing to say, but some people do say it because that is the only way that they can make their anger and their disgust felt at what left-wing politicians are saying, particularly about men. And it does appear here that Sargon's tweet was in response to this Labour MP saying bad things about men. He said, I am not going to apologise for my crimes against political correctness. I hate political correctness, he said. I mean, the guy is getting closer and closer to being a full-on nationalist, really. I mean, when you hear what he's saying, he has really improved. I mean, we've been very critical of Sargon here at Radio Aryan over the years, and I must say I don't have any criticisms of him at all now, and I just wish him all the best, and we'll do all we can here at Radio Aryan to increase the chances of him winning this election. Mr. Benjamin accused journalists of being dirty smear merchants, adding, I am not answering your questions. I am not apologising for anything. And they've taken this out of context, obviously. He's saying he's not going to answer their questions about this tweet because he has already answered that. and three or four of the journalists that were there. They continue to ask him about this tweet, even though he's already dealt with that. But that's all they want to talk about. So they just proved that that was all they were interested in doing was smearing him. The article says his use of Twitter in 2016 hit the headlines when he responded to Labour MP Jess Phillips' concerns over threats of sexual assault by saying, "I wouldn't even rape you. Feminism is cancer." And there's a lacuna in that. So there was obviously more that was actually said in this tweet. Now, I believe he was probably implying that these threats of rape should not be taken seriously. These threats are being made because people wish to express their disgust, and saying, being polite about it is not really going to express the amount of disgust that people feel. I mean, these politicians, they talk as if everything that people say on Twitter and everything that people say on social media, as if they're actual threats that people want to carry out. They don't. It's just a way of expressing people's disgust. It used to be said about politicians, they should all be strung up on the lampposts, or they should all be lined up against a wall and shot. Nobody meant that seriously. Nobody meant that they were going to plan and plot to put a load of MPs against a wall and then shoot them all. It's just a turn of phrase. It was just a way of expressing disgust at the way that the country is being run. And that's what these so-called rape threats are about. They're not threats. They are people expressing their disgust at feminist MPs. And they're expressing their disgust in that form because they know that that's what is going to annoy the feminist MPs the most, if they use language like that, that it's going to annoy them the most. And a lot of men feel that feminist MPs are deliberately going out of their way to annoy men as much as they possibly can. Continuing with this article, at UKIP's European election campaign launch in London on Thursday, Benjamin was directly asked about the comments by Sky News reporter Kate McCann. She asked Benjamin why he thought it was acceptable to say, on Twitter, that he wouldn't even rape a female Labour MP. And again, why should he not say that on Twitter, that he wouldn't rape a female Labour MP? I mean, is she upset that she wanted him to say that he would rape a Labour MP? She should be pleased that he said that he wouldn't. And his answer was, because I don't think that women are any different to men in the way that we should treat them. And this is what feminists constantly ask for. They constantly claim all they want is to be treated the same as men, but they quite clearly don't. He said, unlike the establishment, unlike our judges, who literally say, if you were a man, I would send you to jail. I think we should treat women the same as we treat men. And quite obviously, this is true. Women are not treated in the same way as men are. 99% of the prisoners are men. And nobody is saying, oh, the reason why there's so many more men in prison is because the judges and the establishment are all anti-male. They're all misanthropic or whatever it is. Misandrists. They're all misandrists. Nobody's saying that. But it is quite clear that women are not treated the same as men. He said, that means if a woman is being a giant bitch and laughing at male suicide, I am going to be a giant dick back to her. Any questions? So that explains here that this Labour MP wasn't just innocently going about her business and suddenly a lot of people sent her a load of tweets saying they wanted to rape her. She had obviously really annoyed men with something that she said. Something that she said that, according to this, was the equivalent of laughing at male suicide. So because she was laughing at male suicide, people felt that they wanted to express their disgust. And he just said that he wouldn't even rape her. And to be honest, that's probably more like what people should say. I mean, you look at Diane Abbott recently, who is so deluded that she seriously thinks that these people that send these tweets, that they seriously do want to rape her, and that some of them have got pictures of her all around their rooms where they fantasize about it. I mean, that's absolutely delusional. I mean, it's far more truthful for people to say, I wouldn't have sex with you if somebody paid me. I mean, that's basically what he was saying here. He was then asked if he believed it was acceptable to joke about raping a woman. To which he replied, yes, 100%, deal with it. Now, quite clearly, he is saying that because this is what these feminists fear the most. They assume that all men are just waiting for a chance to rape women. And that's absolute nonsense. That is absolute nonsense. You're far more likely to be raped by non-whites or by Muslims or by blacks than you are by white men. If a white man was to see a white woman being sexually assaulted, they would steam in there and beat the crap out of the man that was doing it. If Muslims see a woman being sexually assaulted, they will form a protective circle around what is going on so that nobody else can get in to rescue the woman, and then they will all join in. And this is a phenomenon called taharush. And this goes on wherever you have large amounts of Muslims. And these feminists don't seem to be too concerned about that. But their biggest fears are that men just constantly want to rape them, men want to rape them with their eyes, etc., etc. Yet when there's a good-looking man in the room, then they'll be all over him. Then they'll be trying to get the good-looking man's attention, the handsome man's attention, they'll be flirting. And if it's a not very attractive man that's in the room that might think that he might try flirting with her, might try chatting her up, he then runs the risk of being accused of sexual harassment. So men that do know what is going on, white men that do know what is going on, they're not very happy about this. They're not very happy about the way that laws are now weighted against men, because we did used to be all equal under the law. I mean, women are the fairer sex. They have a third less the strength that we have. They can't protect themselves in the same way that we can. So we used to have it that women couldn't go to prison. We used to have it that women couldn't actually testify in court because we thought that that wasn't right, that women should be sent to prison. But women they didn't like that. They want everybody to be equal. And yet now, it's not that they want everybody to be equal. They want to have rights that men don't have. And this is why people are annoyed at it. And this is why people say silly things, which gets understood as rape threats by these crazy Labour MPs and Conservative MPs. And it really, it just shows you how divorced they are from general public feeling, that they think that the public are sympathetic to them. The public are not sympathetic to them. The public are furious at these MPs. As we will see later on in this second half of the podcast. But despite all of this, despite all of these slanders and smears that are being made up by the mainstream media just about this tweet from 3 years ago, Sargon is doing splendidly. He's got masses of support. Another thing that he was pointing out to the mainstream media that were all assembled there, he was pointing out what a failure they are. He was listing the amount of one-star reviews that they get. And it was like 86% of your reviews are just one star for the ITV. 90% of your reviews are just one star for the BBC. These aren't the exact figures, but you get my drift here. And then you look at Sargon, and he's got 1 million subscribers to his YouTube channel. You look at the fact that because the alternative media is now so popular, the establishment media have forced YouTube to start putting the establishment media into the results and removing the alternative media from the formerly democratically produced results. I mean, the results that you used to get on YouTube, it used to be whatever is the most popular video would be at the top of the results. So it was entirely democratic. Not so anymore. It doesn't matter how popular your video is. If it questions the mainstream narrative, you won't get in those results at all. It will all be the BBC and Channel 4 and CNN and all the establishment media companies that YouTube was originally created to provide an alternative to. It's the same with the Google search rankings. People used to search for the truth about the Holocaust, and they used to put in things like, there were no gas chambers. And that sentences like that used to be the most popular searches to do with the Holocaust. And they've removed them. People search for Stormfront on there. They don't find Stormfront anymore. They get a redirect to some left-wing site. It's the same as on Facebook, when they announce that people that are searching for content to do with nationalism on there, trying to find out about nationalism, will be redirected to communists. They will be redirected to the competition, in other words. Instead of having a free debate, they've decided that they just want to censor all the competition, which brings us back to why it is so important that we have this free debate. And why I say we should be supporting Carl Benjamin and supporting UKIP. Because he's quite happy to debate people on the alt-right. He's quite happy to debate extremists on the alt-right. I mean, he was quite happy to debate Andrew Anglin. And this is why the left hate him so much. Because he talks to nationalists. Because he believes that everybody should have a voice. And I go along with that. I believe everybody should have a voice. So we should be supporting Carl Benjamin and we should be supporting UKIP. Anyway, we've got to halfway through the podcast here, and unfortunately I haven't got Max Musson with me today, so it's time we had a little bit of a music break, I think. And what I've got for you is, it's not a new track, I think it's actually been out for a month, and the artist is actually British. This is Neon Reaction with a track called Heartfield. And I'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. This is the Aryan Britannia podcast at radioaryan.com. And that piece of music there was by Neon Reaction. Now, in part one, we were talking about UKIP and the rise of UKIP and the rise of Carl Benjamin and Mark Meacham and the press conference that they gave that I recommend people watch. And we also talked a little bit about Nigel Farage's Brexit Party and how Nigel Farage's Brexit Party is leading in the polls and UKIP have about 7%. Now, the reason why the UK Independence Party and why Nigel Farage's Brexit Party are doing so well is because of the treason that we have watched this year from the two main parties, from Labour and the Conservatives. That's the only reason why they are doing so well, and the best of luck to them. But it does look as if Theresa May has utterly destroyed any chances of the Tory party ever getting, holding on to power. I mean, they may not never get into power again. People are talking about the death of the Tory party. She hasn't just messed up Brexit. She's destroyed the Conservative Party as well. And this serves them right for making her the leader of the country and expecting her to negotiate leaving the EU. Women are the worst negotiators of all. They can't do deals. Even the feminists will tell you that women can't do deals. This is the reason why they don't get so many pay rises, because they're no good at negotiating. So not only did they put someone who was no good at negotiating at the helm, they also put somebody who campaigned to remain in the EU, a career politician who has done nothing all her life except take orders from the European Union. She had no idea how to negotiate a deal. Her role was simply to hear what the European Union wanted, hear how this was going to be a Brexit in name only, and take that back to the Houses of Commons and the House of Lords and get the other MPs to agree to it. That was her role. And that is now clear for everyone to see. And that just shows us, it's just proved to everyone in the country how the Labour Party and the Conservative Party don't give a damn about the British people. And we don't have a democracy because they don't do what they don't carry out the democratic will of the people. Democracy is supposed to carry out the will of the most number of people. Populism. Democracy is supposed to be populism. Whatever is the most popular, whatever the most people like, that's the way that we're supposed to be governed. I don't think that is the best way to be governed, but that is how we are told we are governed. And what this has done is shown us that that's all a total sham. There's no such thing as democracy in Britain. We are holding European Union elections 3 years after the public, in no uncertain terms, gave instructions to the British government to leave the EU. And because of these traitors, and they are traitors because every one of the MPs in Labour and Conservative, they campaigned on a platform to leave the EU either with a deal or with a no-deal Brexit on March the 12th. And that didn't happen. And in actual fact, we've got about 85% of the House of Commons are all Remainers. They all want to stay in the EU after being voted in because they said that we would leave. So they're all traitors. They hate being called that, but that's what they are. How else are you going to describe an MP that goes back on his word and goes back on the democratic will of the people? That's exactly what a traitor is. So not only has she messed up Brexit, she's also messed up the entire country's faith in democracy, and she's destroyed her party as well. Because a lot of them, there's always been this, like a civil war within the Tory party between the MPs that wanted to leave the EU and the ones that wanted to stay. And it had finally been decided by the will of the people that the Conservative Party should leave the EU, and then the faction within it that didn't want to leave sabotaged it all. They sabotaged their own party, and the result of that is the death of the Tory party. And that's even what it's being called in the headlines. This report on it comes from the Daily Mail. Theresa May has been warned that she is presiding over the death of the Tory party after a devastating poll revealed the immense scale of the grassroots revolt against her. The exclusive Mail on Sunday survey shows that an astonishing 40% of Conservative councillors are planning to vote for Nigel Farage's new Brexit party in May's European elections, in protest at the Prime Minister's failure to conclude the UK's exit from the EU. So that's 40% of the people that the Conservative Party have actually got on the councils of Britain are not going to be voting for their own Conservative Party. They're going to be voting for Nigel Farage. Now, these are people that, some of them have been members of the Conservative Party all their lives. These are dyed-in-the-wool Conservatives who feel so betrayed by their party that they're going to support another one. Three quarters of Theresa May's own councillors want Mrs. May to resign, and an overwhelming 96% believe that the Tory party has been damaged by the impasse. Well, it's been more than damaged, isn't it? Theresa May's been warned that she's presiding over the death of the party. Conservative MPs preparing to return to the Commons after the Easter break have been shaken by the strength of feeling in their local associations over Mrs. May's leadership. After she agreed to delay Brexit until the end of October, if she cannot strike a deal. And you just think about the deal that she's tried to force through the House of Commons three times, breaking all precedent. If something doesn't pass through the House of Commons, it has to be changed substantially before you try and put it through again. It was never changed once. All she did was come out with more threats. Well, if you don't accept this deal, then we won't have time to prepare for our no-deal Brexit. People still don't accept the deal. Then she says, oh, well, if you don't accept the deal, I'll get rid of the no Brexit and we'll stay within the EU. And people still wouldn't accept the deal, no matter what threats she used. And by taking away the no deal option, she took away Britain's best bargaining chip. And this woman is such a traitor. Such is the scale of the anger that the party's 1922 committee of backbench MPs will convene on Tuesday to discuss changing the rules to allow a new vote of no confidence in her leadership. Mrs. May is currently protected from a challenge until December following a failed coup last year. And you'll remember that at the time when they had this vote of no confidence, we pointed out that it was a very, very strange time to be holding this vote of no confidence, because it was very close to us actually leaving the EU. It was coming up to March. If you think there was 3 months to go, and everybody was thinking, well, if she doesn't get a deal through, we'll be leaving anyway. So what I think this no confidence vote, they knew that even though everybody hated her, even though everybody had no confidence in her, they would still vote for her, because they knew that if she was taken down, there would be a general election and Jeremy Corbyn would win. So they deliberately did that. They deliberately timed that because they knew that she would then be protected for 12 months. She couldn't be kicked out of the parliament for a year, which left her free, basically, to scupper the Brexit plans, take away the option of leaving with no deal, and beg the EU to allow us to stay until October. She wouldn't have been able to do that if she had the fear that she could be kicked out by this vote of no confidence. And it was very, as I say, it was so strange that that happened in December, because it should have happened in June last year. That's when there were noises about this, when she first took the deal to Chequers and said, this is the deal that I've come up with. We're going to ignore what the Brexit secretary has been doing, and the Brexit department will ignore that, and we're just going to do this instead. That's when there should have been the vote of no confidence. They have to basically have a certain number of MPs send a letter in to the 1922 committee saying that they want a vote of no confidence. And the further it went in the year, people thought, well, there's no way it's going to happen now because it's getting too close. There would be no point in having it now. And then suddenly these letters came in, so that there was a vote of no confidence in December. I think it was people that were pro-EU and pro-Theresa May that sent those letters in, knowing that there was no way that she would be voted out, and because that vote had been held, she would be safe for another 12 months, which is easily enough time for her to screw Brexit up, as we've seen. The Tory group on Derbyshire County Council is so disillusioned that it has gone on strike by refusing to take part in next month's European election campaign. And it's not just them. And there are lots of Tory members that are refusing to campaign for the Conservatives at the next election. This is why the people are saying that the party has just died, because the members don't support them anymore. I don't think Labour are any better. The Labour voters, they all feel that they've been let down by Jeremy Corbyn because they voted for Brexit and we still haven't had it. The Servation researchers were bombarded with vitriolic remarks by the hundreds of councillors that they contacted for the MOS poll. Just think about that. I mean, the people that were replying, they didn't just tick a box. They made it very clear how furious they were with the Conservative Party. One said, the Conservative Party is dead. It will take a strong leader to dredge it out of the mud. Another said, for God's sake, get on with Brexit. It is killing us on the doorstep. So because of this treason that the Conservative Party have carried out, these supporters just look like idiots when they knock on people's doors and say, well, join the Conservatives, vote Conservative, and the people in the houses say, well, we voted to leave the EU. Why has Mrs. May begged the EU to allow us to stay? Why are we having EU elections 3 years after voting to leave? I don't blame these Conservative Party members. They must feel like they're complete idiots going out campaigning for this party that has lied to everyone. Mr. Farage only launched his Brexit party earlier this month, but one poll last week put its support for the European Parliament elections at 27%, well ahead of both Labour on 22% and the Tories, who were stuck on 15%. And if you think that, as I said, if Nigel Farage hadn't put his Brexit party in there, and if he'd joined up with UKIP, that would be 35% that the UKIP party was on, over double what the Tories were on, and almost double what Labour were on. It's such a shame that Nigel has split the vote like that. But this does show the strength of feeling that is against the establishment parties. 27%. That's the number of people who are going to be voting for the Brexit Party, which has only been in existence for a couple of months. The new party is estimated to have already received more than 1.5 million in donations. Our poll shows if Boris Johnson was Tory leader for the elections, the number of defectors to the Brexit Party would nearly halve. So think about that. If the Conservatives had actually got rid of Theresa May and put somebody in there who was a Brexiteer, half of those people that are going to be voting for the Brexit Party would still be voting for the Conservative Party. And this is unheard of, that the actual leaders of the Conservative Party are directly going against what their members want. I mean, if they continue with this, there's no point in having the Conservative Party. What do they stand for, if not what the members have decided they want them to do? I mean, these members say what they want their representatives to carry out for them, and the Conservative Party have done the opposite. They've lost all their support. I mean, that's incredible that they've dropped to 15%. 15% of the vote. Out of those Tory councillors who said they were certain to vote in the elections, 52% said they would vote for their own party, while 40% would vote for the Brexit party. So I guess that means that another 8% would be voting UKIP. But of course, they're not going to tell us they would be voting UKIP. I mean, one of the snidey things about this with Nigel Farage's new party is that the mainstream media are supporting Farage because they don't want UKIP to get in. So not only has Nigel split the vote, he's the establishment alternative. He's who all these conservatives are now going to be supporting. I mean, he's really defected, basically, Nigel has. Nigel's defected from the people to the establishment by doing this. And you can see that by all the support that he's getting from the establishment. If Mr. Johnson was Prime Minister, the proportion voting Tory would rise to 65%, and only 22% would be voting for Mr. Farage. So it does look like there's a lot of support for Boris Johnson here. Out of the 96% of councillors who believe that the Brexit deadlock has damaged the Tories, 39% believe it has done so permanently. Permanent damage Theresa May has done to this party. A total of 76% of the councillors want May to resign. Of these, 43% want her to go right now, while 33% want her to go only after a deal has been reached. So that 33% must be still hanging in there that we can get this deal done with the EU. They haven't quite lost their faith yet like all the others have. They will. They will eventually. A slew of rivals are preparing campaigns for the moment when Mrs. May does step down as leader. Mr. Johnson tops the grassroots rankings on 23%. Ahead of Michael Gove on 14%, Jeremy Hunt on 12%, Sajid Javid on 11%, and Dominic Raab on 9%. That's good. That's good. Because hopefully that means that we will either have Johnson or Gove as the next leader of the Conservative Party. Certainly don't want Sajid Javid or Jeremy Hunt. But if Mr. Farage is included as an option for Tory leader, he would beat everyone except Mr. Johnson, who is on 19% to Mr. Farage's 15%. And that's obviously a bit of fun that they've had there with this poll. Who would you be voting for? Would you still be voting for the Conservatives if Farage was leading it? So he's obviously very, very popular among the Conservative Party. I mean, really, that's what they should have done. As soon as 17 million people voted for Brexit, they should have made Farage a lord. They should have made him, given him a knighthood, put him in the House of Lords, and then as a Conservative Lord, and then they could have had him as special advisor. They could have put him in charge of all the deliberations with the EU. So he could have effectively been leading the Conservative Party in their Brexit strategy. But instead of doing that, they mocked him and ridiculed him. And Farage then did the dirty on all of us by retiring for 2 years, thinking it was all over and done with, when really that was the most important time that we needed him there, because he supposedly had these plans on how to leave. And he just thought, well, oh, it's all done and dusted now. We voted for it. I'll just have a 2-year holiday. And when I come back, I'll stab my old party in the back. You have to give him credit for actually forcing the Tories to give us a vote on it. But his behaviour since then really leaves a lot to be desired. The six-month Brexit extension granted to Mrs. May has infuriated the Tory grassroots. Of the councillors questioned in our poll, 64% voted leave in 2016. The language used by many of the councillors will shock Downing Street, with a number describing the current situation as the end of the Conservative Party. And when you think about it, 64% of the councillors voted to leave, and then you've got 33% there that want Theresa May to go only after a deal has been reached. That must be the people that voted to stay in the EU. Everyone else in the Conservative Party, all their councillors, wanted to leave without a deal, which shows you that this deal is just for the benefit of the EU. And Theresa May is working for the EU, not working for us. Servation founder Damien Lyons-Lowe said Conservative councillors are an influential and important indicator of the party's grassroots support. Well, they don't have any grassroots support anymore, do they? Out of those who will cast a vote, almost half will not be voting Conservative, underlining the deep divisions over Europe and the difficulties the parties will have in getting out the vote for the forthcoming elections. So this is just for the EU elections. What do you think it would be like for a general election? I mean, this means that Corbyn is going to be in there. He's going to be in number 10, thanks to Theresa May. And they're already talking about that in the papers, about the preparations that are being made for Jeremy Corbyn, because he says that he's not actually going to move into number 10. He's going to stay in his North London home rather than actually moving into number 10. And they're making all these preparations for that now, because this is such a mess that Theresa May has made of this. And she's tried to blame the other politicians. She's tried to blame the public. And it's basically, it's all down to her. It's all down to her loyalties and her ego. And her ego, because she had a mandate. She had a huge mandate that she was left with David Cameron. And what they did is they parachuted Theresa May in as leader of the Conservative Party. And instead of getting on with Brexit and leaving, she was so vain, she thought that if she had a general election, she would win by a landslide. And she didn't win by a landslide. She didn't win at all. She had to do a deal with the Democratic Union Party in order to actually have enough votes to pass anything in Parliament. So that was down to her as well. I mean, this woman has just been one big failure from beginning to end. I mean, I guess I don't really need to remind listeners about how she presided over the largest invasion of Britain since 1066 and the Norman invasion. More foreigners managed to break into Britain under her watch than any other time in history. And the Conservative Party promising to get immigration down to the 10 to 1,000 a year, changed to tens of thousands, 10,000 people a year, and it's 1 million people a year. Traitors, a lot of them. I guess there is one good thing that's come out of this, and that is that people's faith in these parties and faith in democracy has been absolutely shattered. They can see that they are Conservatives in name only. They can see that the Labour Party doesn't care about working class people, doesn't care about working class whites. They call for more immigration. They can see that the Conservative Party are not interested in conserving anything at all. And we have actually seen that there are still some good Conservatives left, and they're part of the European Research Committee, I think they're called, or the ERG, the people that David Lammy has called Nazis, and that Hope Not Hate really don't like them either. Jacob Rees-Mogg, John Redwood, and there's a few others as well. And when you see them on the television, they're really good. Really good. They do stand up for the people. So there are a few decent Conservatives left, but not enough to save the party, I don't think. I think they really are dead. I mean, they're as dead as Labour were in the 70s, before Tony Blair brought them back from the dead. And I think this really, really must have shown the British people that they need a change. They need a change from right and left, and from these parties that are just based on agreements and ideals. We need a party that's made up of our people, a party that shares the same blood as us, a party that has the same family history as us, a party that we can get behind, that we know is going to be arguing for our best interests because we're related to them. That's what we need. We can't have parties that are just built on supposedly shared ideals, parties that only have a link on paper. We need a party that shares the same ancestors as us. A party that, if they make policies that are going to harm the nation, a party that they are going to be taking part in that harm themselves, so they're not going to do it. We need a nationalist party. We need a party that is based on race. And if we can't get that, then we'll have to take the closest we can get to it. A civic nationalist party. A civic nationalist party like UKIP, who are already standing for a stop to immigration, a stop to Islamisation, doing away with political correctness, doing away with the anti-free speech laws. That is a good step in the right direction. So, get out there and vote for UKIP. And hopefully, we'll get Carl Benjamin and Mark Meacham in there, in the EU. Nigel Farage, I think, is just a shoo-in for getting into the EU anyway. And if anyone gets a chance to talk to Gerard Batten, try and twist his arm to get Tommy Robinson in there. Because I do think that if UKIP were to put Tommy Robinson in there, that they would be as popular as the Brexit Party. And then we could get 60% of the vote. Imagine that, 60% of the vote for civic nationalists. I mean, that would be amazing. That's what really needs to happen. Gerard Batten needs to put Tommy Robinson forward as an MEP. I mean, that would just be so sweet. And if we can't have that, well, at least we'll get Sargon in there, and we'll get Mark Meacham in there, and we'll get Farage in there. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back next week with more Aryan Britannia for you. And of course, I do hope you all have a great Easter Monday and a lovely week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. For an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.